Welcome to Sacred Sexuality with Leslie Blackburn. Straight talk, enthusiastic support, and heartfelt encouragement for you to open up to your sacred sexuality. And now your host, Leslie Blackburn.
Yay, my love. Thank you so much. I am so excited and honored to be sharing on this show, and excited in particular about today. So each month I share a bit meditations, we get into discussions, education, awareness, and really like exploring topics in the realm of sexuality, consciousness, and things that maybe are scary or we don't get a chance to talk about openly sometimes, and giving us a chance to be authentically who we are and explore those beautiful topics. And the topic we have for today, I'm very excited about. As we begin, I'm going to have us settle in to kind of check in with our bodies and begin that journey of really deeply listening. And we'll do that and come back in just a moment. So let's take a moment to settle in. And invite an exhale with some sound. Connecting, breathing, feeling your body as you notice what's it like to feel. And at first, that may involve simply allowing an exhale with some sound and giving yourself permission to vibrate a little bit. Feeling how you relate to the earth, feeling your body, your presence. Notice the connection, allowing your root gates to soften, pelvic floor. And feeling a connection, maybe even a call, beloved earth, lover earth, help me connect my womb, my creative center to your body, to the deep body of the earth. And allow the exhale to carry away any heaviness, any nervousness, excitement, anything that feels complete that you can let go and invite to be cleared, carried away, transmuted. And then an inhale, perhaps connecting with an yes, more please, a sense of light, life, energy, and nourishment, letting it fill your body, and a call to above, beloved creator, help me to connect and trust to receive that divine love, grace, down through my body. And allow these two facets, this quality of earth and of above, the mystery, the beyond, the divine, letting them come in and be, inviting our bodies to be a channel. And then perhaps an intention of health, healing, and wholeness, new perspectives, new awareness, and shedding away some old layers, allowing the authentic you to be. And with the breath of gratitude for yourself, for taking time for you to explore, perhaps listening, connecting, whether you're joining us here live or in the archives, welcome. Yay. So my excitement today comes from a bit of inspiration of what's been happening and alive for me lately. And it's that I have recently connected with a beautiful fellow priestess. Her name's Francesca Gentile. And we are exploring the topic today of sacred kink. So what I found is that I've noticed and connected with Francesca's work over the years and really been so resonant with how she shares and what she shares and her philosophy and her style. And we've had the honor, I believe, recently of getting a chance to connect and to talk as she's making her way here to the Midwest. So Francesca, who is located in California, gets to join us here to share some workshops. And as we've made this connection, I invited her to join us on the show today. So I'm honored and looking forward to hear her views and her exploration as we talk about the topic of sacred kink. So as I share that, so welcome, Francesca. Welcome, Francesca. Hello.
I am delighted to be here.
So, yeah, I'll let you begin. Hi, good morning.
Good morning. It is early here in San Francisco. It's 7 in the morning, but it's a beautiful, radiant, sunny day, and it's beautiful to feel the energy of the day as it awakens. So thank you for bringing me in.
Oh, yay. You're welcome. And indeed, I'm so glad you're able to join us at this early hour. I was outside just checking in, getting my feet on the earth and hearing some birds and just seeing one land just outside the window. And that just delights me as I kind of settle in and feel the earth and nature around me, which is a super yummy resource for me in terms of like feeling, okay. So as we chatted recently, it was so lovely to hear a bit about your background and such. And I would really love to begin, if you feel called, to share a little bit about yourself and what brought you to the path of, first of all, sacred sexuality and just the realms of the sacred. What is that for you?
You start with the big questions. You know, I was raised in the Midwest, and I was raised very Catholic and was always very spiritual and felt like I could dance with the trees and see something beautiful in the fire or felt welcomed in water. And I didn't really think about it because I was being raised Catholic, but I knew that there was something really special. And it wasn't until I was around puberty that something started to, in a way, arise as a question or started to create a split for me, because my parents gave me a book written by a priest in the 1950s called Tips for Teenage Girls. And in that book, even French kissing outside of marriage considered a mortal sin. And for those of you who are not Catholic, there are two levels of sin. The mortal sin, like killing someone, which would be on your soul forever and really destroy your right relationship with the divine. And then there's a venial sin, like lying to your mother about eating the cookies, that would be, you know, you could pray about that, you could confess to a priest, and it would be removed. Well, a mortal sin, like killing, was similar to French kissing outside of wedlock.
Wow.
And yeah. So by the time I finished reading the book, I was terrified of sexuality and even terrified of boys. So if a boy would put his arm around me in a movie theater, I might start to shake, you know, in fear and nervousness. And I had this thought really early on that if I kept this, and I was really only 13 or 14, if I kept going like this, by the time I was married, and I had guessed that I might be married in my, you know, mid to late 20s, I would be frigid. I wouldn't be able to really enjoy the kisses, the caresses, the sexuality with my husband. And so I decided to work on this. And I created something for myself that I would later learn in psychology was successive approximations. Every night, I would imagine a boy putting his arm around me, and I would try to breathe into it, like breathe in as long as I could before I would feel frightened, and then I would let it go. And the next night, I would try to hold it a little bit longer and a little bit longer until, you know, maybe eventually I could imagine kissing him or laying next to him or something like that. And then I really treated myself in a very gentle way in this process, where I would intuitively pick boys and later men who would support my own pacing. So I'd date someone in high school who really would let me decide if we were going to kiss or not going to kiss. I would end up dating someone in college, such an angel to me, who would understood my issue. This was at Jesuit University, Marquette University in Milwaukee, and he would let me lay next to him naked, and he wouldn't do anything that I didn't want him to do. And if he got an erection, he would say, Don't worry, it's fine. Nothing has to happen. I mean, what an angel, right, in college? We would spend the whole night together. And we would, you know, kiss, and he just absolutely let me be safe and let me get comfortable with the male body. I mean, it was just really, really blessed. And I was able to wait until I was, until I was almost 21, and before I found someone that felt right to me to have my first time. And, you know, I hadn't studied Tantra. I hadn't, you know, there wasn't sacred sexuality texts available like there are today. So I was making up my best guess of how to do something in a more graceful manner, in a more ritualistic manner. And, you know, but I see that as the beginning. I see that as my soul calling out for something that, you know, I didn't even know the word sacred sexuality. It wasn't in my vocabulary. But I was trying to create something. You know, another way of saying sacred sexuality is to say sexuality in which I feel present and connected to my heart, connected to my discerning mind, connected to my will and my centered yeses and nos and my capacity to share in power, to share in choice in a healthy way, connected to my arousal, connected to my feet and my capacity to be present on the earth in this moment at this time with whoever I'm with or with myself if I'm self-pleasuring. You know, I think that would be sacred sexuality. And at the time, I was, you know, just trying to, in my own, you know, guesstimate, trying to create something that I could be present with, that I could be whole with. And then later, when I would read a novel, every now and then there would be something in a book that, especially a fantasy novel, that I would think, there's something so beautiful in that. And let's look into each other's eyes and light candles like this priest and priestess did, or this druid did, or this, you know, these magical fairy beings did. And I feel that these fantasy authors were channeling something. And then, you know, eventually, as luck would have it, or as fate, really I think fate would have it, I was still in the Midwest. I was in television, and everything electronic started to break down around me. It would stop working. And when you're in television, this is a problem. Or when you're a tech person, this is a problem. And I was somewhat ignoring it because I was not and am not a particularly technologically savvy person. But when I sat next to a friend's Christmas tree and her lights started to flash, and I asked her, "Do you have flashing Christmas tree lights?" And she said, "No." I really became very spooked, like, what's going on here? And being raised Catholic, I thought maybe it was something evil. Was it a poltergeist? Was it something, you know, some negative evil energy that I was going to have exercised from my body. And there was a woman in my Tai Chi class who wore a pentagram. And I went up to her and I said, "Do you know anything about the occult?" And she asked me why I was asking her this. And I explained about this electrical issue where light bulbs would burst, where, you know, the editing bay would shut down, where these all things would be happening. And it connected me with her priestess. Her priestess asked me if I was upset when these things were happening. And I said, you know, television is very stressful, yes. And the situation next to the Christmas tree, I was upset about a boyfriend. And she told me, "You're running excess energy."
Mm-hmm.
And she taught me some grounding visualizations. And I was able to begin to ground my energy to the point where if I drove under a street lamp and the street lamp went out and I could ground my energy, the street lamp would come back on. And I was so fascinated by this, I called her back and I said, you know, I think I've always been psychic. I think I've always had this big energy. And I think if I don't learn to work with it, I'm going to be harmful to myself and others. So I began to train with her. And there's a part of, she was a Wiccan priestess, and there's a part of the Wiccan ceremony that is the most sacred. Like in the Catholic ceremony, the most sacred moment is the transformation of the water into wine and the transformation of the wafer into, or not, into the blood of Christ. It's why some people say Catholics are cannibals. It's because Catholics believe that in the ceremony of the Mass, that the wafer turns into the body of Christ and the wine turns into the blood of Christ. And we're not, you know, Catholics, we're not cannibals. It's just something to say that we are taking Christ into us, which is a very beautiful concept. But in the Wiccan ceremony, it's the most sacred moment is when the woman holds up a chalice and the man holds up a blade and puts the blade very ceremoniously into the chalice, which, you know, is the penis and the vulva, you know, coming together. And I thought, oh my God, this is so beautiful. And this is, there's something in here that is important, that is feeding my soul. And that was the beginning in a more formal way of starting to study and eventually looking cross-culturally, looking to Tantra, looking to Taoism, looking to Middle Eastern, looking to all sorts of cultures for the practices and roots of sacred sexuality and seeing that they belong to every culture and every religion and every people. It's not just, you know, in the Far East. It's our birthright. So
absolutely. Beautifully said. Yes, it is our birthright and it does belong to all. And, you know, that power of within us that really we do have our own connection to source, to divine, God, to whatever, however we connect with the realms of the other is so empowering. And I believe, you know, so much a part of this path. So,
yeah, and if we know, in a way, if we know where to look, if we know how to listen, if we are on the sacred search, you know, ask and, you know, the answers shall be given to you. I feel that our lives are formed by the questions that we ask. So when I started to ask, even as a young girl, how can I make sure not to be frigid? And then I began to ask, how can I do this in my own pace that has me stay connected to myself? And then I began to ask, how can I be in this thing that I started to discover had words, sacred sexuality? How can I be in this thing? What is this thing? Then the more I asked, the more it was revealed to me.
Beautiful. And I believe that's that opening to that information, you know, to that guidance, so exquisite. And it's really beautiful to hear how that came through for you so intuitively in your journey, you know, from the beginning going, you know, this book that's terrifying me, wow, there's so much more, and I know that, and how can I meet that for myself? That's what I heard from you. It's like, wow, how can I, at the pace that feels right for me, slow down and listen and stay in my body for the experiences that I choose to want to open up into? And that's exquisite. It's so, again, empowering, and empowering for others to know that that's real and possible. Yes, yes. Thank you for sharing your story there.
And, you know, Leslie, as I tune into this with you, I notice a little movement in my heart, and a little bit of almost like a pinch in my heart. And it's also there for me to say that in my life, at times, I've moved away from this. I've tried to be loved more than to stay connected to myself and my wholeness. And that in doing so, I've stepped away from that, at times, from that integration, from that heart, body, mind, spirit, eros, beauty. And when I do that, it always leads to something that is harmful to myself and my partner and my relationship. It never serves. And yet it's so seductive to say, I'm going to skip over this wholeness in me to try to be liked by you or to be loved by you or to get something from you, rather than taking that extra time to say, I want connection with you. I want sexuality with you. And I'm just maybe not there yet, or there's something that my body is trying to communicate to me so that I could actually communicate it to you. And I need a moment of silence, or I need a moment of quiet, or just being held here until I can find the words to tell you and me the next step.
Yes. Aho. And I can so relate to what I'm hearing you say, which is there are times where that feels difficult, or there's some aspect that falls away, and like giving ourselves permission to slow down with that loving respect of our own bodies that says, I need to pause, please, and breathe here and listen to what my body's communicating. Yes, you know, that is valuable and important. And I think sometimes overlooked in the really driven culture around our sexuality that is often viewed as so racing, like towards a goal-oriented outcome, and often even being sort of informed by and trained by traditional mainstream porn, which is so much about racing and so much about the quick money shot, so to speak, or the quick, like it must go so fast, or we must race towards this specific outcome. And in working with people and in my path, I've noticed that as well. Like people meeting me and going, that's how I learned about how to relate and how to have sex. And to go, there are other ways, and that to like trust our bodies and let them be heard in that other way, really giving it value. It can be really hard with all of those outside pressures. And so I just really beautiful to hear that, yeah, you know, that truth comes in, and yes, I can still hold the space for what I need. And what feels safe and good. Beautiful.
Thank you so much. I really want to breathe that in, that sense of with compassion that so many people today are learning about their sexuality from pornography, and also from, you know, from movies and music and books, which is all about well, this is very interesting. I noticed that there is a similarity between male porn, which is the video porn, the visual porn, and female porn, which is often the romance novels. And when I really started to unpack it, even though they might look different, you know, the female romance novel, you know, she sees him across a crowded room, and he's handsome and powerful and strong and usually has money or is older, there's something that where he has a sense of, you know, power and wealth in some way. and she's often seeing herself as less beautiful or less attractive or somehow less than he is. But over time, you know, they notice each other and it builds and it builds. And in a moment that's just the right moment, that's neither too soon in which she would have to slap him and feel that he was disconnected from her and really rude, not, or neither too late when she would feel that he's not checking in with her and he's not really attuning to her. In the perfect moment, he will grab her and kiss her passionately and, you know, throw her on the bed and ravish her with love. Well, it sounds so different on the one hand than the male porn where, you know, the pizza man comes to the door and rings the doorbell and the girls are sitting in the living room watching their favorite show and they open the door and they say, hey, is there sausage on that pizza? And he says, yeah. And is it hot? And he says, yeah. And then they grab him and they drag him into the living room and they rip off his clothes and they start sucking him, you know, sucking his cock and you know, and then they, you know, take turns climbing on top of him. And, you know, he doesn't have to do anything other than receive how hot and passionate they are for him. Well, on the one hand, that would look very different. But when I looked deeper, I said, oh, my God. In both forms of pornography, the protagonist, the in the story, doesn't have to do anything. They don't have to do anything. They don't have to say anything. And their deepest desires and fantasies are fulfilled. Both men and women, even if women turn to romance novels or Twilight or Fifty Shades of Grey, you know, even if they're going in a different direction, it's ultimately the same. Nobody's talking. And nobody's actually asking for what they want in a conscious, centered adult way.
Yeah.
And nobody's dialoguing.
Right. I love it. What a beautiful awareness to notice those threads in that way. Thank you for sharing that. Yeah. I want to take a moment now to just breathe this in and give us a short break. We're going to come back with Francesca for more as we dive into the realms of sacred kink. So thank you, and please take a moment as we come back.
You are listening live to Body, Mind, Spirit Radio. Today is Tuesday, May 17th, 2016, and you are listening to Sacred Sexuality with Leslie Blackburn and special guest, Francesca Gentile. If you'd like to talk with Leslie and Francesca live on the air, give us a call at 646-378-0378. That number again is 646-378-0378. Now back to your host, Leslie Blackburn.
Thank you. And Francesca, I love what I'm feeling as we sink in with this is this presence of inviting staying in the body and being really conscious with choices, with communication, and with like how we interact and opening to support that supporting us to feel really good about who we are. And I'd love to take a moment to explore a bit in the realm of kink. So kink and fetish and BDSM, these are qualities, attributes of our sexuality that also can be held in this super sweet space of sacred. And what I like to say about that is it doesn't just mean we're oming on the side of the mountain and that sex has to be all pretty and fluffy and rainbows and unicorns and blissful, but that even the deep raw territory of, you know, intensity of the way the power dynamic play of a fetish situation may unfurl has this sweet way of being when we can make conscious, empowered choices intentionally or sacred, or at least that's what it's sort of meant to me. And in my own journey with it, It's really also been a part of helping me to let go, which maybe we'll come back to that. But I want to hear from you, what is kink meant for you, and what is, how do you hold what sacred kink is? What is that for you?
To the concept of what is sacred. And when I looked at the divine, and I was really starting to unpack, you know, this concept of God or the divine, and I noticed that every religion felt that they were right. You know, the Catholics think they're right, the Methodists think they're right, the Jewish people think they're right, chosen by God, you know, the people, Muslim people think they're right, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Everybody thinks that they have the right relationship with God. And I thought, well, you know, which one is right? They can't all be right. And then I really started to go deeper into that, and I thought, well, wait a second. What is the definition of God? And even when I looked at, you know, the pantheistic religions, I saw that at some level they believed in the allness. They believed in, you know, the Atma. They believed in the divine within all things, this infinite consciousness. And at that level, the definition of God is infinite, eternal, before the beginning, after the end, omnipotent, all-powerful, omniscient, all-knowing, omnipresent, all places at all times. And I thought, wow, if that is actually the world definition of God, is there anywhere where God is not? By definition, no. God would be everything and in everything at all times, everywhere. And then I thought, if that's the definition of God and God is in everything, then everything has the opportunity to be sacred. And then I thought, well, how come if God is everywhere, you know, we have war and violence and molestations and rapes and, you know, all kinds of things. How can we have that if God is in everything? And then I thought, well, you know, I think most religions also teach that we have free will. And so what if everything is already always sacred, but I have a choice whether or not to interact with it in a sacred way? So eating food could be sacred, or I could shovel it into my mouth, or I could eat things, you know, without really thinking and, you know, even feel not good in my body later.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, a kiss could be sacred, but if I tried to force a kiss on you and you didn't want a kiss, well, it's no longer sacred. And I looked and I said, it's not the thing. You know, a knife could, in a surgeon's hand, is a blessed tool. And I thought, wow, there it is. Anything can be sacred, and anything could actually be destructive, harmful. And sacred maybe is holistic. Sacred maybe is connective. Sacred maybe is conscious. Sacred maybe is empowering. Sacred is contributing to the wholeness, the holiness, the health, which are all etymologically the same root in English. Definition of sacred. Well, then spanking could be sacred or not. Or tying someone up could be sacred or not. Or, you know, anything that is within the world of kink or BDSM. And for the sake of our listeners, let's unpack this a little bit, that BDSM stands for many things in those four little letters. So bondage, domination, sadism, which is often described as giving someone pain, and masochism, which is often the sense of receiving pain. And then also it could be, D could stand for discipline, S could stand for submissive, D could also stand for dominant. So you have the relatedness of the dominant or the guide of the experience, and the submissive or the guided, the one that's receiving the experience. And then kink is really has come to mean the container in a way for anything that is seen as a little bit edgy, a little bit naughty, a little bit, you know, oh, not just the sweet and not just the, you know, kissing and caressing and having penetrative sex in a missionary position. So, mm-hmm. you know, the minute that if you've ever actually wanted your partner to ravish you and maybe, you know, throw you on the bed and pin you down and, you know, rip off your clothes, you could already be starting to be in the world of kink and BDSM. If you've ever, you know, gotten out your scarves and tied your, you know, your necktie and tied your honey to the bedpost, you know, you're already in the realm of kink. If you've ever noticed that your beloved has a very lovely bottom and you just want to smack that and it's so pink when you do and they like it, you know, they actually go, ooh, I like that. By the way, there are, for some people, everybody has receptors at the kind of the base of the butt cheek that go towards the genitals. And for some people, those receptors are supremely arousing. So mm-hmm. to spank their bottom, especially at the crease between the butt cheek and the leg, can send these tingles directly to the genitals. Not everybody feels that, but a lot of people do.
So,
you know, there you are. If you've ever scratched your partner and bitten them and growled at them, kind of wrestled around on the bed with them, you're already in the realm of kink. It's like, who knew? I'm already in the realm of kink and BDSM. Yeah. So if you've ever said, you know, I'll be your nurse tonight, or, you know, or one of my partners had this, he used to say, I want to be your stable boy. You know, you're the lady in the manor. And we didn't consider ourselves kinky, but he would say, you're the lady in the manor and I'm your stable boy. And you've come into the stable and you know, and you want to get your riding crop out. And I didn't know that was a kinky thing until much later. So here we are, you know, so many of us are already in the world of kink and BDSM and we don't know it, you know, number one. And then, you know, what makes it sacred or not sacred? Well, you know, the minute that you're doing something that somebody doesn't like, even a kiss, to me, that's not sacred. The minute you're in saying yes when you mean no, that's not sacred. Or you're withholding mm-hmm. your no, that's not mm-hmm. sacred. But the minute that two people are authentically in their bodies with their authentic yeses and they feel safe with one another and they feel connected to one another and now they're sharing their desires and what they're discovering together is their yes and they're really enjoying that yes together and traveling that yes together in a way that has them feel more and more connected, more and more mm-hmm. safe, more and more trusting, then I say they're in the sacred. And they're in the sacred whether they're exploring, you know, the lady in the manor and the stable boy fantasy mm-hmm. or, you know, whether they've decided to wear black leather or, mm-hmm. you know, whether they're, you know, tying each other up with silk scarves or whether they're tying each other up with rope or something else. It's really, to me, it's that energy that you're following of the authentic, connected yes that deepens your trust with yourself and one another that really has you be in the sacred together. And then, you know, everything becomes possible, including, you know, blindfold me and, you know, maybe walk me through the house and have me, you know, I hear kitchen drawers opening and I don't know what's happening, but I trust you. And then as I start feeling certain sensations and I'm following my authentic yes and my authentic no's, I feel like I'm going into something that's more and more profound and I'm feeling this deep sense of trust. And then maybe I'm still blindfolded and my partner brings me up to the bedroom and we continue to explore sensation. And some of it starts to be on the edge of pain, but they ask me to breathe into it. And I start to feel some profound energy move through my body that's beyond pain. Maybe I even go into a vision, start to see stars, or I start to feel that I'm meeting God. And when I started to do my own personal research into the realm of kink, reading and research and later experience and research, I started to see and recognize that these things that we call kink in a modern way, or BDSM in a modern way, actually go back to 20,000 years, 30,000 years. They're in the roots of shamanism. They're, that these things can lead us to trance and vision quest, that these things can lead us into altered states, that these things can lead us into a profound experience of finding our own strength, or even prayer, or offering to the divine. And I saw these roots that went deeply, deeply, deeply into the past and into rituals, Native American rituals, like the Native American sun ceremony where they pierce their pectoral and dance for vision quest for their tribe. Where in today in Indonesia they'll be drumming and they'll take a knife and they'll pierce their, once again, their pectorals, and they'll pray and they'll feel that they're connecting to God. And where there's they might even go out, you know, different tribes would go out into the desert without food and water for a period of time, where in certain tribes, and this could be Native European tribes, we're not just talking, you know, Native American or First Nation people in Canada, we're talking a Native European tribe, that you might wrap someone in ropes and put them in restraint to, it's kind of a deprivation experience, like the flotation tanks are today. And when I was reading a book called Spare Me the Roses, Give Me the Thorns, and I was reading about a woman being flogged and being going into trance, I actually, when I first read this and I wasn't identified as at all kinky yet, what went through my mind is, oh my God, they're revealing the sacred mysteries. Oh my God, it was like a past life experience that was saying they're taking these things that were used in the most sacred and they're letting the average person know about them. Oh my God. And it was a very strange experience. And I also started having downloads of how these tools and techniques were used in ancient times. I would see torchlit ceremonies in, you know, going through temples. And this was all before I ever experienced one thing that was, you know, kinkier in modern BDSM. But when I met a man who was kinky that I wanted to date, and he said, I'm kinky, you don't have to be kinky to date me, I can be sensual, but you have to respect it in me, I felt that I heard a voice saying, he is your portal. He is your portal into the world of modern kink. And you cannot teach sacred kink. You cannot teach ancient shamanic kink until you understand what the modern world is doing with it, so that you can bridge it. You can bridge from this ancient shamanic path into this very secular present.
Beautiful. I really love hearing that piece of the thread for you, of that bridge. That resonates so deeply. It's really exquisite to hear how you're articulating that. My own experience was one of kind of feeling it in the private realms before, of course, it came into working at all with it in my sessions in its own way. And the portal, like that sense of you must experience and be with this, you know, and before I even considered it as something that I would want to share with the world, like, you know, for me, it was a lover who really wanted to, he loved the ancient rope art of Shibari, and as the visual stunning artistry of it. And he's like, you know, I'd really like to explore this. What do you think? And I was looking at some pictures and some of them looked like, oh, that looks painful. I don't think I really want to do that. But you know what? I'll give anything a go with you. I really loved and trust this man. And it ended up being this, because I held what I needed, you know, I just, this is my yes and this is my no, but I want to lean into where the edges are a little bit. And it helped me really start to feel open and allow, like, in the path of female ejaculation and letting go. And I would have never named that. Like, I remember literally in the experience of about a 2-hour, like, I was just repeating, like, I had no idea. I had no idea. I had no idea what it was opening in terms of the sacred container we had created for it and the path to divine and what was moving through both of us. Just unbelievable. And again, my, you know, at the time, my analytical engineering self looked at that and went, I don't know if I want to do that, you know? And, but I went, no, I do. Something in my body said, yeah, I do. I want to give it a go. And, to affirm it, there's so many beautiful ways into exploring this work. Thank you.
Yes, and that sense of trust is what I'm hearing with your partner, that you did trust him, that in the trusting there was probably a deep connection, a deep yes. Mm-hmm. He had a connection with you and your body or your energy, so that when you were exploring together, you felt like safe. You felt that he was listening to you. He was listening to your body. It felt like you could listen to your own body, that your truth could be spoken.
Yeah.
And that's the sweet spot. And when two people can, you know, really journey together into the places that, you know, on one hand might be a little edgy, on one hand might hold a little bit of nervousness or a little bit of anticipation or a little bit of anxiety even, but we have enough trust in ourselves and in them to walk those edges safely, then we come home to ourselves in a new way.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And really, we can extrapolate that to, you know, pursuing the theater arts or getting up in a stage or even karaoke. I remember at times being so nervous to get up on a karaoke stage and sing. And yet, you know, when I sang and then people liked it, I felt more whole. I felt more myself, especially when we do this, I'm going to say sober. If we use drugs, like even if I take 5 drinks to be on the karaoke stage, I won't be able to integrate my own empowerment. But if I'm terrified and I'm sober and then I get up on the karaoke stage and I sing and people, my friends say, you are actually really good, Francesca. And I can breathe that in my sobriety, then I can integrate it. And I can, it can bring home that my sense of my own courage and my own empowerment. And next time I'm on the stage, I feel less frightened. And it's similar in these realms of the physical edges or the sexual edges, is that sobriety is so crucial to them.
Mm-hmm.
So that I can really hold my yes and integrate it later. I didn't realize how strong I was. I didn't realize how connection was. I didn't realize, and then there's more of me present in the world today.
Yes. Yes. Really. As I hear in that, the integration, the power of integration of the space to be present with and allow it to vibrationally reweave our bodies, our physical bodies, as these exquisite ways that we interact and relate with the world, you know, as energetic beings. Like, what a gift. And what I'm hearing you say, you know, really letting ourselves stay sober in the way that we can stay plugged in with our physical self, and in that have that deep, sweet, integrative possibility of wholeness, of here I am, right here, right now, in my body, and yes. Exquisite.
And I also want to want to bring in something that I think is part of the sacred in kink and BDSM, but also moves into another word, which is the therapeutic.
Mm-hmm.
So when we think of the shaman, to me, the shaman is someone whose goal it is to contribute to the wholeness of a human being, of a community, of a tribe, of the world. And the shaman is tracking, when is my community going out of harmony? When is this person going out of harmony? And that's how they have their illness. Like the illness arises, disease arises from the soma and the psyche, the body and the soul going out of harmony. And so the shaman looks for how to bring this back into harmony. And in shamanic world, that could be, you know, times of tying someone up or having them in silence, calming them down. It could be, you know, herbs. It could be food. It could be vision quest. It could be, you know, taking a birch rod and birching the body or something else. So it's how do we find this wholeness? And the tools and techniques that are in kink, when we can ask that question, how, because our lives are formed by the questions we ask, how can I utilize these to bring greater wholeness? Now, if I've been, you know, raped in my past, maybe I find someone who I have a deep trust with, and I say, I want to replay or role play this rape with a new ending, rather than just say, why do I always have these rape fantasies? I mean, the rape was terrible. Why do I have these rape fantasies? Well, are some of these fantasies of traumatic events, so when something is really traumatic happened or abusive happened, and then we keep fantasizing about it,
mm-hmm.
it's actually our body trying to help us survive. So a traumatic or abusive event is thanatos. It's the death force. Thanatos is the death force. It's part of what has us feel to die. And eros is the life force. It's part of what has us enjoy a beautiful spring or summer morning. It's what has us delight in, you know, the laughter of a child. It's what has us savor the senses.
Mm-hmm.
Eros brings us into the aliveness and joy of living. So when thanatos has happened, when molestation, abuse, war, something has happened, and violence, and then we start to have erotic fantasies, it's actually our beautiful body, our beautiful psyche, trying to keep us alive.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not saying you need to have this. It's not like if I was beaten as a child, then I need to be beaten as an adult. It's saying that there's something in my psyche that's been keeping me alive by bringing this fantasy to this terrible circumstance. And now as an adult, I'll say, you know, I was beaten up at the playground as a child, right around puberty. I eroticized it so I could survive. And now let's slow this down. Let's really bring that 12-year-old forward. Let's allow her to be in this moment. Let's slow down even the strike. And
yes.
Maybe what I'm going to do is when I can re-presence it and slow it down, holding both adult Francesca and 12-year-old Francesca, is that suddenly I sob. I sob and I sob uncontrollably. And in a way, I was never safe to do at 12 on the playground.
Right.
I'm able to finally release. And so much of, if you study Peter Levine, and
yes.
if you study somatic recovery from trauma, it
mm-hmm.
often is going back into the trauma and letting yourself finally have the release. Or it is going back into the trauma and finally standing up for yourself.
Yes.
Or doing something, or sometimes both, you know, having the release and then standing up for yourself. And,
right.
and really rewiring the experience. And I feel that a percentage of kink, not all of it, so I feel a percentage of kink is actually a desire for the sacred, a desire for that trance, that subspace, that dom space, that, you know, that deep transformational space of of prayer and ordeal and initiation. I feel that a part of kink is an unconscious desire to replay something. And if we could bring it into consciousness and slow it down, we could actually heal that experience from the past.
Absolutely.
And then we may still want to be spanked, or we may still want to be, you know, tied up. We may still, but we'll have released the trauma portion of it.
Absolutely. To me, that's very much the nature of slowing down and listening to the body and letting its messages, like the tremendous wisdom, the infinite wisdom of the body, be heard, and listening to the way it held that experience that was of the greatest service at the time, and ways to gently unwind that, which has been such a powerful part of my journey as well. And thank you so much, Francesca, as we're coming to a close. I'm just so grateful for our time together as we got to share and chat on this beautiful topic. And I really appreciate you sharing your wisdom with us. Thank you.
Thank you for having me, sweetheart. There's such an energetic field and presence that you just hold, and it is truly divine, and I'm honored to have been here with you today.
Oh, thank you, thank you. And with that, we are now going to take a breath and take a short break and be right back.
Thank you for joining us today. You are listening live to Sacred Sexuality with Leslie Blackburn. Reminder that the folks at Great Lakes Energy Exchange are hosting Leslie to teach a Tantra Weekend workshop in Northern Ohio on June 11th to the 12th. Sign up now. There's still room, and it's being offered at a super reasonable cost. See the website mysteryschoolofthetemplearts.com for a link to the web for more details. Also, Leslie has a Tantric Energy Touch workshop available on CD, where you can explore a class in the comfort of your home with a partner or by yourself on an audio CD available at the website. Announcing also that a great set of events are here local to folks here around Michigan. Leslie's colleagues are creating a beautiful week from May 21st to the 29th of events with an opportunity to experience the work of our guest, Francesca Gentile, here in the Midwest. Hosted by Jenna Tasker of Secret Eden, the Passionate Pleasures Festival Week is a series of classes and workshops designed for women, men, and couples where you will learn exciting new skills while exploring fun and empowering practices. Go to the website centerpeacemiformichigan.com and join in. The best way to get announcements about upcoming events, as well as inspirational stories, videos, and radio show archives, is to subscribe to the email newsletter by clicking on the link available under Contact at the website mysteryschoolofthetemplearts.com. Also, be sure to check out Leslie's next Sacred Sexuality video cast on Wednesday, June 1st at 10 a.m. Eastern. And a final reminder that Leslie is available for speaking engagements and for private sessions, again at the website mysteryschoolofthetemplearts.com. And now back to your host, Leslie Blackburn.
Yay. Thank you, my love. And thank you all for joining us today. Let's take a final breath of settling in, feeling your body, feeling your being. You are important, beautiful, and alive. Let yourself trust that very connection of self. With deep gratitude, the divine light in me sees and honors the divine light in each of you. Ah, namaste.
Join us again next time for continued support on your path of self-realization. The power is within you to heal your body, connect deeply with others, manifest your heart's desires, and experience your deepest bliss. By our healing, we impact others, inspiring love for humanity and the planet. Thank you for joining us for Sacred. Sacred Sexuality with Leslie Blackburn.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.